Hello, and welcome to Fellowship Church Rouge Park. We are so glad you're here. If you're a first-time guest, thank you for joining us.
Said that that it was me that gets the privilege of being able to preach to you, but I feel like they have done the preaching already. What a powerful testimony each one of them had, and thank you for sharing it. One of the things that they referenced, maybe that you've heard, is the brokenness that was in their life. And I just wanted to show you quickly what we teach at the church. Everybody, I'm sure all three of you have seen this before, and many of you have seen this before. But we kind of share the gospel this way, that we do live in a broken world. And we do have this brokenness all around us and inside of us. And on top of that, we don't desire it, because at one time we were living in God's design. And we were in harmony with Him. And with the world and with each other. But our sin took us away from God's design into this brokenness, and we try all different ways to escape it, and you heard some of that in their testimony. And God sees us here, and He wants us to experience that, so he sent Jesus. We call this the three circles. And we're going to reference that a little bit today, and it's something that we've shared with a lot of you, but just by chance, who here has not heard the three circles? Could you just raise your hand and let us know? Who has not seen or heard this presentation before? Just raise your hand high. It's okay. Yeah. So quite a few of you have. Great. If you saw someone who raised their hand, like, maybe you can explain it to them later, because we want all of our members to be able to explain the gospel to everybody. And so today we're going to talk about a story that kind of talks about the divide. Once we were in God's design, but then we transition into this broken world. And so Kay Savannah assigned some preaching to me, and we're going to talk about the story of Cain and Abel today. And you know, the last time Kay Savannah assigned preaching to me, we were talking about Lamentations, and it was like the destruction of the people of Israel. And I was like, okay, well, that's kind of a downer. And the next time he assigned something to me, he assigned Cain and Abel, the first murder in the Bible. And I was thinking, okay, I'm starting to get a hint that maybe Kay likes for me to do the really depressing stuff, and I don't blame him. But, you know, as I thought about this story, and I thought, is this a story that we really want to talk about on a baptism Sunday? You know, the more I read it, I said, yes, this is the picture that we want to see. Because there were some new realities at play that Cain and Abel were the first generation born into, the new realities of the fallen world. But there were also some new mercies that were shown, some incredible new mercies. And we're going to talk about that this morning. And so, you know, maybe you have dealt with a new reality in your life, maybe a change of job, a change of school, something changed in your family, the loss of someone, the addition of someone has changed your reality before. But I think the last time maybe globally we had this one of these new reality shifts was maybe 17 years ago in 9/11. And people, they talk about that. There was the post-9/11 world, the pre-9/11 world. And listen, for those of you who are in your 20s, maybe it's hard for you to remember this, but the world was just a different place before 9/11. And it's hard to describe. Like, North Americans just thought differently about the rest of the world. The news was different. Our politics, our government, our ideas of war were different. I mean, it was just literally a different world before 9/11. And nowhere could you see the shift of a new reality more than in the airports, I think. So I got this picture. This is what the TSA or the people who used to do security at the airport used to look like before 9/11. That is an old man with a chicken hat and saying, hey, hope you have a great trip. And listen, just so you believe me, and those of you who are not young enough, you don't remember this, but you used to be able to walk into, you know, these straight to the gate without a ticket. Even if you didn't have a ticket, you can walk your friend to the gate, to the tunnel. I remember this because my grandmother never liked flying, and I used to walk her straight into the tunnel without a ticket. You used to be able to go with drinks. You didn't have to take your shoes off, your belt off. You know, you didn't have to take out your laptop from your computer. There were so many things that were different in that time. I'm really thinking it is harder to check our kids into Sunday school this morning than it was to get through the airport at that time. Things were just like, hey, have a great trip, and you went through a metal detector that you didn't even realize, or maybe you were thinking, I don't even know if this thing really works, because you know, you'd go through and your keys were still in your pocket and nothing would beep, and it was just a different world. You can get to the airport 30 minutes before your flight, no problem. I mean, the world was just a different place back then, and you could see it real obviously at the airport. When, as much of a shift that we experienced as a world after and before 9/11, boy, the shift that Cain and Abel were born into, the new reality they were born into was so, so much more seismic. And nowhere could you see that more than in the way they had to approach God. So we're going to read this story together. And just remember this, that Cain and Abel were the first people born into brokenness. And their new reality was different than what their parents experienced with God, what Adam and Eve experienced with God. And so we're going to read this story together in chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4, we're going to read verses 1 to 12 first. And it says, "Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, 'I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord.'" I think that might be some of your favorite verses, like some of your sisters, "I've gotten a man with the help of the Lord." Maybe you need to claim that verse for yourself. Verse 2, "And again, she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. And the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? And why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it.'" Verse 8. "Cain spoke to Abel, his brother, and when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, 'Where is Abel, your brother?' He said, 'I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?' And the Lord said, 'What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. And now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth.'" So this story is the first time we see this fallen world in action. It's a new reality that existed for Cain and Abel, and they were the first generation born into it. So let me share with you some observations that I have. I have four observations about the story that I just want to be careful. I don't want to say things that aren't in the text. So I'm just going to do very general, simple observations that we see here, and then four applications for that, and then we'll do our baptism. So observation one, here's the first thing that I noticed in this story. There would now be a right and wrong way to approach God. In this new world, in this new fallen world, there would now be a right and a wrong way to approach God. We see in the text that both Cain and Abel approach God with an offering, which is not something that Adam and Eve ever did. Before the fall, we don't hear stories of Adam and Eve doing an offering. Adam and Eve just, you know, if you read Genesis chapter 3, you know, after they sinned, the idea is that God was in the garden walking, looking for Adam and Eve. The picture that's painted there is that God and man would walk together in the garden, fellowshipping. I mean, imagine the awesomeness of that man and God would walk together freely in the garden. There was all kinds of access, and there was an enjoyment of each other's company. And that's the picture of life before the fall. Adam and Eve had that with God. But after that, now, after this fall, this disconnect that we see here from God's design to brokenness, where it says sin, where Adam and Eve chose to do things their own way, after that, there was a disconnect with God, and now there was a right and a wrong way to approach God. I remember a few years ago, I went to go visit my elementary school that I grew up in Houston, Texas, and it was called Atkinson Elementary, and I remember walking in, and it was a weird experience, because I remember that as a child, I would just walk into those doors and run into Mrs. Leinbarger's class, Mrs. Leach's class, Mrs. Smith's class, all my teachers. I could just go freely from the door into their classroom, and you know, it was just so carefree, and I can run and be silly, and I was a child then. But as a 43-year-old man, when I went back to visit, and it was a school day, they stopped me right in the hall, and they were like, "Who, excuse me, who are you?" I'm like, well, I'm Seba Vasquez. I used to go here like, 37 years ago. And I was thinking that would give them some kind of relief, but they're like, no, you're going to have to go into the office and get a badge. And, you know, like, they put me through this whole new experience, and things had shifted, right? This place that I used to walk in so carefree and just thinking about the crazy things kids think about now as an adult, you know, I was put through security. I was put through some protocols. And listen, this is kind of the picture of what was happening with mankind and God. Before, we were carefree, walking with God in the garden. But after the fall, after the disconnect, all of a sudden there was a right and wrong way to approach God. I'm going to show you a couple of things. An offering was now necessary. And again, compare that with the freedom that Adam and Eve had. That now, in order to approach God, for the first time, we're introduced to an offering where Cain and Abel had to bring an offering when they approached the Lord. So not only was an offering necessary, but the right kind of offering apparently was necessary. Because, you know, the text makes it sound like God likes, Abel's offering more than Cain. So you needed the right kind of offering. It makes it sound like God likes meat more than vegetables, which confirms my theory that God is originally Argentine or Texan, like one of the two. Of course, who doesn't like meat over vegetables? But actually, we don't know if it was a meat and vegetable thing. We just know that there was somehow, some way, in God's way of viewing it, there was a good offering and a bad offering there. And maybe there was something behind the offering. So not only was an offering necessary, not only was the right kind of offering now necessary in this broken world, but the right kind of heart motivations behind the offering were now necessary. Because see, God doesn't just talk about the offering, he starts talking about Cain's heart here. Maybe Cain's offering wasn't the only problem. Maybe the attitude behind the offering was the problem. Because in verse 6, again, the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? If you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it. He's saying, listen, you haven't done well in this situation. There was something that he did wrong, and I don't think it was just a matter of the state of his vegetables. You can see a huge hint of how things were going to work in that verse. In the future, in this new world, this new reality that mankind and God were living in, this verse 7 kind of previews the covenant of the law and the transactional nature that there was going to be, that as long as you're doing the right thing the right way, everything's going to be okay. But if you don't do things right, the right way, then you're in trouble. And that's kind of a preview into what was the new reality into the world. Even though God tells Cain, listen, even though he says right there, you know, that sin is crouching at the door and its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it. Even that last little phrase where God tells Cain, hey, you've got to rule over this sin that's crouching at the door. I promise you that God actually knew that Cain was not able to do that. That we aren't actually able to rule over the sin that's lurking in our hearts and that's crouching at that door. God always knew that Cain was going to be horrible at this. And that's my second observation. My second observation here is that mankind would not do well in this new reality. So this new had to, you know, come to God with an offering and the right kind of offering, the right kind of heart behind the offering. This new, hey, just do things, the right things the right way and you'll be fine. That kind of paradigm was not going to work with Cain. And in reality, it doesn't work with us either. Who could tell me? Anybody? Star Wars fans? Anybody? Yeah. I know it's slim pickings. There's two guys in the back, afraid to be thought of as nerds. There's three. Okay, three. Do I have another hand? Is there a fourth? Okay, four and five. Okay, I know Clint's a Star Wars fan. Okay, so we got some Star Wars fans. Can you tell me the line in the movie, besides May the Force be with you, what's the line in the movie that's appeared in every single Star Wars movie? Dude, you are a nerd. Yeah, completely. I got a bad feeling about this. In every single Star Wars movie, and he's usually introduced, you know, by Han Solo, and he would say, man, I got a bad feeling about this. And it was in every single movie. And listen, when you read this new paradigm, and when you read what God had said about, look, if you do well, things will go well for you. And if you don't do well, you know, sin's going to take control of you. When you read that, you should be thinking, I got a bad feeling about this. Because we were never going to succeed in that kind of paradigm. Because you know what? We just don't have the ability to do the right thing the right way all the time. That is gone. Because sin is lurking. It's crouching at the door. It's in us and it's trying to master us. And listen, without some form of intervention, we're just going to fall prey to it. So the second observation here is that, you know, mankind would not do well in this new reality. God already knew sin was going to have the upper hand in Cain's life and in ours as well. And listen, the failures soon after God tells them this just start happening really fast. Really fast. The fails would start happening fast and furious. Look what 1 John tells us about this incident. And sometimes, guys, use scripture to help you understand scripture. 1 John chapter 3, verse 12 actually talks about this. And it says, we should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. But listen to this part. It says, and why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brother's righteous. See, he wasn't evil because he murdered. He murdered because there was already evil inside of him, already being practiced. He was already being influenced by the evil one. So, you know, it starts to tell us that there's a state that Cain is in here that's making this new paradigm of, look, if you just do the right things the right way, everything will go well for you. It just wasn't going to work for him. We see that in the scripture, that Cain was already influenced by evil, and he wasn't going to be able to escape it. There was more going on behind the scenes in Cain's heart than just the state of his vegetables. And this confirms, look, that sin already had taken root in him. And I hate to break it to you, but you know, you can hear it in their story. Sin takes root in us too. Cain was always going to fail in this paradigm, and so are we. Cain represents all of us in some way. I don't know if you notice this, but Cain's the older brother, right? There's a lot of older brothers listed in the Bible. And if you think about them, here's some older brother, younger brother stories. Cain and Abel, right? Ishmael and Isaac. Esau and Jacob. Joseph and his older brothers. David and his older brothers. And even when Jesus created a story up, you know, a parable, the prodigal son and the older brother. And can I just tell you, there's a bit of an older brother motif in the scriptures that the older brothers tend to be the ones that screw up. They're the ones who represent like man left to himself. When man tries to lunge and do things his own way, that's what the older brothers kind of represent in these biblical stories. And then the hand of God is always on this younger brother. And so Cain here represents man left to himself, man attempting to do something without God. And listen, how many of you have an older brother? How many have one? Raise your hand. Listen, remind them about this motif. I do it with my brother all the time. You know, I like to remind him that, hey, I just want to tell you, Andres, in the Bible, older brothers were kind of like doofuses. You know, and biblically speaking, that's true. And they represent essentially all of us without God. And so, one of the things that I want you to know this morning is that you're Cain in this story. Don't read this story and say, no, you don't understand. I'm Abel in this story. You are not Abel in this story. Okay, you're not the innocent one who's been hurt. You're Cain in this story. When you read this story, see Cain. We are all fallen. And listen, if our hope was built on our ability to do the right thing the right way all the time, we would be sunk. And it's devastating. Because observation number three that I have here is that the consequence of our brokenness is even more brokenness. Cain's inability to please God with the offering, his inability to do that, that thing that was between him and God, that problem he had, that personal issue, soon became everybody's problem when he killed his brother. And listen, the text makes it sound like this wasn't like a crime of passion. This wasn't like Cain being so mad that he was spurned by God that all of a sudden he just lifted up his hand and he killed Cain. He said he had a conversation with Cain, that he called and talked to Cain. And then when they were later out in the field together, that's when he killed him. And then when God confronted him about it, he hid it. And this whole thing just reeks of being premeditated, planned, and concealed. And the attitude that Cain had was basically, if I can't have God's approval, then no one else will have it either. And if I'm broken, then everyone else will feel broken too. And guys, we're kind of like that. The issues that we have with God, the brokenness that we experience, I wish that was just something that only affected you, but it affects everybody around you. Whether you intend for it to affect others around you, whether you're as premeditated as Cain, I don't know. But listen, our brokenness just multiplies brokenness in this world and hurts others. We're that way too, the same way Cain was. Because our choices as broken parents, broken children, broken siblings, broken employees, broken neighbors, broken citizens, they affect other people. We're not isolated in that way. Our brokenness affects others. And listen, I've got this like picture of Cain and Abel here. This is something I found. It's a visceral picture, right, of Cain killing Abel. And that's how he was multiplying brokenness. But you see, he was broken on the inside, and God spurned his offering, and then all of a sudden he took it out on Cain, and that's how he did it. And maybe you're like, no, that's not me. I've never done that before. I mean, maybe this next picture is how you do it. Maybe it's online. You just attack people. Or in interpersonal relationships, you just shut them down. You know, your brokenness spills out of you all the time. And listen, when we go over the three circles in this way, I hope those of you who have learned it and are teaching it to others, I hope that you're not telling people that we are innocent people living in a broken world. We are broken people living in a broken world, adding to its brokenness daily. We multiply brokenness around us. That's the predicament that we're in. You see, we're not only in this new reality where we're disconnected with God, and not only is it that we have to now bring an offering to God that somehow we can't manage to do, an offering of our hearts, that we can't do it, and that makes us broken people, but we break things around us too. And maybe not to the extreme of Cain and Abel, of murdering somebody, but I promise you, your brokenness has affected people around you as well. Look at how the brokenness was multiplied even with God's curse on Cain. You know, think about it. When Adam sinned, the curse was that, you know, he wouldn't just be able to pick all these fruit off the trees and just eat, and the earth wouldn't just supply for him, that he would have to work the ground. That was the new curse, right, with Adam, that he would now have to be cursed to the ground. But look at what happened with Cain. God says, you know what? I'm going to curse you from the ground. The ground's not even going to give you anything anymore, and you're going to be a wanderer, and the ground's not going to help you at all. And understand how it's getting more and more severe. And listen, don't read these stories and see, oh, these are origin stories for our farmers and for nomads. They're not. These are stories that tell the complexity of sin and how it grows and builds and brokenness multiplies in this earth. Things were broken and getting worse. God said your dad was forced to work the ground. In your case, the ground won't even work for you. Brokenness is so prevalent. Do you know what you can learn from Abel in this story? Can I just tell you that? Like, don't use him as like, oh, I see myself in Abel. But can I tell you what you can learn from Abel in this story? Here's what you can learn from Abel in this story. The world now is such a broken place that even if you do the right thing the right way, you'll still feel the effects of brokenness. Does that make sense? No one escapes it. That Cain had a good offering, but he's the one that died because he lived in a broken world. That's what you can learn from Abel. That even if you do the right thing the right way, that's no guarantee that you won't feel the effects of brokenness. In fact, I know that you will. No one escapes it. You know, in 2008, we had this financial crisis. Again, a lot of you who are young, you're like, 2008, I was playing like PlayStation or whatever. But in 2008, the world thought, oh, this is it. Like, we're done. Like, all the economies are going to collapse. Everybody's going to, like, trade stuff now. There's no money, you know, all this stuff. It was kind of a bad situation in 2008. And the reason why it happened is, like, some people were buying houses that they couldn't afford, and they had these bad mortgages, and people dealt improperly with those bad mortgages. They were called toxic debt. And essentially, the whole system collapsed because of it. And here's the deal. Some people were buying homes they couldn't afford, and they were being kind of too aggressive in their spending, and it's kind of what transformed or started this whole series of events. But even the people who were very good with their money got affected by it. You didn't escape the consequences of it because you were doing the right thing. And that's what we can learn from Abel, that no one escapes brokenness. And that's why we, even as Christians who now have been reconciled to God, we still suffer. But we don't suffer without hope. I was on campus, on Centennial campus, sharing the gospel with some students, and I met this young man named Dallas who identified himself as an atheist. He had the name Dallas, as like my wife's from Dallas-Fort Worth, so we got to talk. And so I just started asking him stuff, and he said, look, I'll listen to the gospel. Man, I'll become a Christian if you can answer this one question for me. Why did my 3-year-old sister die needlessly in a car accident? And you know what I told Dallas? I told him, Dallas, I cannot give you an answer that will satisfy you. And that's true. And listen, when people ask you things like that, just give them that answer. I cannot give you an answer that will satisfy you. No answer will satisfy them. But the reality is, it's because we live in a broken world where Abels get murdered even when they did the right thing. That is the truth. And that's not soothing to someone who's gone through it. And that's why I don't throw it in their face and say, hey, let's read the story of Cain and Abel real quick. But that is the truth. No one escapes brokenness in this world. So listen, enough of the doom and gloom. I'm getting depressed. I'm going to have VG come stand next to me in just a second, right? My last observation is the good one. Fourth observation is that God makes a way. God makes a way. Even in this story. So far in the new reality, we've seen previews of the law, of this covenantal transactional relationship that we'd have. As long as you do the right thing the right way, you're going to be okay. This is a preview of this new world that they're going to live in. We see previews of brokenness in the world and how it'll affect even the innocent. But we also see a preview here of God's grace. See, I didn't read that part of the story yet because I wanted to save the good news till now. This is verse 13. We're going to read 13 to 16. It says this, Cain said to the Lord, after hearing God's punishment, after being scolded by God, after being cursed by God, Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you have driven me today from the ground, and from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. And then the Lord said to him, not so. Not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest anyone who find him should attack him. Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. And listen, I know that doesn't sound like great news, but here's where God's character starts being revealed. That when Cain rightfully and humbly admits that his new curse, that the brokenness of this world was too much for him to bear, when he admits that to God, God says, not so, Cain. And God makes a way for Cain. And even though he didn't deserve it at all, I mean, Cain deserved to be murdered for what he had done. Even though he didn't deserve any kind of grace, God showed him grace. And so in this story, we see the new reality that this world is broken and there's not going to work out well for us. But we also see this new reality that, God's character, his loving character, is still there. And grace is still offered. And it gets even better. We see later on in the chapter, in verse 25, we see the restorative work of God at, you know, at play. He actually gives Adam and Eve a new son named Seth. And Eve says about Seth, he is in the place of Abel, for Cain killed him, in verse 25. And God restores this little family. So we see this grace start to come through, that he makes a way for Cain. And then we see the restoration start happening in the family, and God has a restorative purpose. But on top of that, I want you to realize this. Seth, this replacement child, wasn't just a restorative piece, man. He was the start of a master plan. Because you know who was a descendant of Seth? Noah, Abraham, David, Jesus. Do you understand that God started putting this master plan together and saying, you know what, I'm going to make a way for everybody, not just for Cain, not just restoring Adam and Eve's family, but I'm going to make a way for everybody through this new line. And it starts to show that God's character is he understands our brokenness, but he wants us to experience God's design. He wants us to experience him again, and he starts making a plan. God saw this new reality and offered new mercy, new grace, new salvation. So let's see how this works today, okay? I gave you my four observations. I just want to give you some quick applications, and we'll be done. Let me tell you that even today, there is a right and a wrong way to approach God. I think that's one of the things we can learn, and we have to realize that. And the right way to approach God is not through sacrifices, but it's through faith in Christ, in his life, his death, and his resurrection. That's what we teach here. I say the only way out of brokenness back into God, into his design, into his presence, is through the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus. Hebrews 4:14-16 says this. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast to our confession. Verse 15, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Do you know a priest like that? Who's been tempted just like you and has never sinned? Do you know a priest like that here on this earth? Do you know a pastor like that on this earth? No, you don't. There's only one priest who can make that claim, and that's Jesus Christ. And because that's true, verse 16, let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. That now we can have confidence and draw near to God in that confidence that Jesus has made a way for us to approach God. And I'm thankful. I'm so thankful for you three who have testified about that you've basically said, I'm identifying with the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and that is how I'm approaching God the rest of my life. Your symbol of being baptized is you saying, when you're down, when you come up, that I identify with the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. You can't approach God with your good deeds. You can't approach God with your good reputation. You can't approach him with trying to be a good person. And listen, you definitely can't approach God through any institution or any earthly priest. You need Jesus. You can only approach him through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Listen, the new reality Cain experienced is still our reality. There's a right and wrong way to approach God. But the new mercy shown to Cain, it's now got a name. That new mercy has the name of Jesus Christ. He is our only way. So listen, four applications and we're done, I promise. Application number one, Jesus is the only way to approach God. And you're like, bro, you spent 30 minutes building up to that one point, Jesus is the only way to approach God? Yeah, I am. And I don't care if you've heard it before, it's worth repeating 100 times. It's worth saying every Sunday, every day, Jesus is the only way to approach God. And listen, the application to that, the action point is, if you haven't already believed it, you need to believe it today. If you're trying to approach God any other way this morning, you need to understand that Jesus is the only way you can approach God. You need to give that other way up and turn to Christ. That's your first application. Here's the second one. I'll be fast with these. Second application, don't go back to being transactional with God. Don't get into performance mode with him. Do you understand that what we were saying is this whole mentality, if you do things, the right way, things will be okay. You'll get your desired outcome. That didn't work to save you. Do you understand? That's not something we can actually do, just doing things the right way or the right things the right way all the time. We are saved by his grace, the grace he showed through Jesus. So now that you are a Christian, don't revert back to being transactional and thinking, well, I'm only going to grow, or God's only going to love me, or he's only going to keep me if I do the right things the right way. Don't revert back to a transactional model. You are under a grace model. What saved you was grace. What's going to sustain you is grace. So don't get into performance mode with God. You're not built for it, and he won't suffer it. Do not get into performance mode with God. Yes, you have to invest in your own growth. Yes, you have to do what God asks you to do. He wants you to obey him, but no, he never wants you to attach your value or his love for you to how well you do those things. So don't get into performance mode with God. Application number three, let the consequences of grace shown to you be grace shown to others. My third observation was that brokenness multiplied and created more brokenness. Listen, here's the third application. Let the grace God's shown you multiply in this world. Show it to others. And just like Cain called Abel aside and had this conversation and ultimately multiplied brokenness, I think there's some of you in here that maybe need to call a brother or sister and have a conversation on the side and multiply grace. And listen, I don't know anything specific, but I have a feeling that there's some people in here who need to have a conversation and say, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? Or, hey, I forgive you. Or I need to make something right. Or I just want to bless you. I know that we need that from each other because we're still broken people. And so I think there's some conversations that need to happen, maybe today, where you multiply the grace that was shown to you by showing it to others. Application four. You need to share with people that God has made a way for them. Listen, this message that we have, the stories that have been told, what we see in Scripture, this news that we now are facing a new reality and that it's impossible really to please God, but he has made a way for us to do so, this is too good of news for us to keep to ourselves. We need to share it with others. God left a mark on Cain to communicate his protection. Listen, God left a mandate on us to be ambassadors of reconciliation into this world, to tell others that God has made a way. And we need to do that. Listen, thank you guys this morning for publicly communicating to the world that God has made a way for you, and therefore he's made a way for all of us. You're going to do that in symbol form with your baptism, and I praise God for it. And I pray, Lord, that if there are some here who don't know you, Father, that they would realize that you made a way for them. Let me pray with you. Can you close your eyes and bow your heads?